I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 412. Magic is no substitute for antibiotics.
Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the weekly Eshcast Panda.
Hey, 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 hey.
How you doing? Oh, that was musical.
I'm doing good,
that was
actually.
Damn musical.
Well, I still have a voice. I'm doing very well.
Oh, yes. I'm so glad we're recording this now while you still have a voice.
I know, because I hate when we record and I have no voice, but I have all these things that I want to say.
I know. And then,
and then I strain even more. And then I have no voice for, like, the week after, and I just start getting it back in time for the show.
I know, it's so bad, like, when you want to say so many things.
And
like,
I want to say a lot of things all of the time.
Like, the couple of times that I've had laryngitis and I've still tried to do the show, and I'm like,
yeah.
Games, stuff, ooh, well, I'm glad you're having a good week. I am also having a pretty good week, you know, any week where I get to play new games with new people and have a good time, it's a good week. So
I can't help but concur with you.
Yeah, it's a good week. So we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. No anime this week, but we will have anime next week.
Yep.
What we do have is all games.
Mm-hmm. Ha!
This podcast.
Homage.
Oh, all games. So much love. But the thing that I'm going to bring to the table this week.
Why do you always go first?
I'm not going first. I'm saying what I'm going to say, and then you're going to say what you're going to say, and I'm actually going to let you go first so I can drink my adult beverage.
Yay.
Okay? Sometimes, Panda, it's not about me.
Really?
I said sometimes. I didn't say all the time.
It's like 97.9999% of your time, and then when it's not, I have to roll for endurance, and I always roll under 10. So
that's not my fault. That's not my fault.
I just have bad rolls.
Dude, you needed to, like, roll up to work on your
roll. And my charisma is just too low. I can't bullshit.
Really?
I don't have the best charisma.
You gotta work on that.
I try, but I always utterly critically fail.
Oh.
It's like, can't I just get a 7?
That's a technical fail. It's about time for that.
But anyway, yes. All right.
Oh, holiday time. Yes, that's one of the reasons that we're talking games. We're also talking games across all of our networks. If you haven't had a chance yet to check out the EGMnow.com site, that's EGMnow.com/Electric Sisterhood, or the entire network of websites, the Issues Program site, B3Crew.com, we are publishing our holiday gift guide items now. We'll be collecting those into a PDF form so you can have them all. But it'll have all kinds of stuff. Games, anime, manga, music, gadgets, books. That's right, literals on your...
Wait, books with pictures in them?
They might have pictures, but mostly words.
Oh, okay.
More words than pictures.
Okay, so not manga.
So not manga.
Okay.
There's will be manga, but also not manga.
Oh, okay.
And for the... I think for, like, the first time ever... A mobile game.
No.
Yes. Has made it into our gift guide.
Really?
For reals.
As a gift?
Yeah.
For the holidays?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Think about it. People are going to be getting iPhones and Android devices.
And I mean, and mobile apps on the cheap cheaps.
Okay. And so if I've spent the money to get you the device, which ain't cheap, even on a 2-year contract, people... The least I can do is set you up with the bomb-ass stuff, or if it's like a family gift of a parent giving the device to a family member, the other family members can then gift apps. Because all of the app stores let you gift apps to people.
All I want for Christmas is apps.
Okay?
And I don't mean appetizers, you jackass.
You know, you can get gift cards to let people buy apps, but I think it's a little more personal to gift somebody an app that you enjoy. And so,
it would be great if there was a way that you could, like, when someone sets up their phone, that, like, if you gift them a game, like, the game automatically just shows up on their dashboard and, like,
that would
downloads.
Be, like, way too big brothery. Like, there'd be people like, how do you know that I just turned on my phone? Well, because it activated on the network, dumbass.
Yeah, but boop, boop. It's like, oh, your game arrived. I didn't buy this game. No, Sally from accounting did. How does Sally have access to my phone? Password swordfish! Crooked nipples!
Crooked nipples! Oh, that's a little bit too weird. But anyway, with all of that said, the gift guide is going on, so make sure that you check out all of our websites over the next couple of weeks to see what we're recommending and for who, because it's helpful to have a guide for if a person likes this, this is the thing up their alley. And not just, hey, spend your money on this. I hate gift guides like that.
I do too.
I like gift guides that are useful. And so that's what we've created. We hope that you enjoy it. Give us your feedback, share it on social, all that wonder stuff. Now, as I was saying before someone thought that I was going to steal the thunder.
Before I rudely interrupted, as something I often do.
I wasn't going to say rudely interrupted.
But it was slightly. It was rude.
It was rude. Like a little, but I wasn't going to say that. What I was going to say is, I am going to be talking about Assassin's Creed Unity on the show today. And Panda is going to be talking about
Dragon Age Inquisition.
Ooh, two goodies. Now, I know before I had talked about I had said that I was going to be talking about the Master Chief Collection and Assassin's Creed this podcast. However, guess what?
You didn't get your Master Chief Collection.
No, I got the Master Chief Collection.
Oh, okay.
But it takes a lot of time to actually get into Unity enough to really give a decent review.
Well, if you want, I can talk about the Master Chief Collection.
No, I think we should talk about the Master Chief Collection together. So I gotta get in there. You talk about
you Jack, get all up in there.
I gotta get all,
get all up in that Master Chief.
First I had to get all up in the AC Unity, but now I've done that. Advanced Warfare, however, not gonna be able to talk about for a while because my dog ate my video game.
And it does not, have we not run it to know if
No, we made
we
the
tried,
attempt.
Oh. Esh Dog the Fourth.
Yep, bitch ate the game.
I'm not gonna say nothing. Well, no, I'm gonna say something. So, of all the Esh Dogs that we've had, and you guys have heard several of the Esh Dogs who have been a part of our family.
Yeah, you've heard.
Even douchebag Biggie, Esh Dog the Third, which is still, she's still actively alive and very bitchy in her ways, has never maliciously attacked my games.
Yeah, no.
So, I feel like Esh Dog the Fourth has gone to a level.
I so wanted to put out on the interwebs that I really wanted to do this review, but my dog ate my homework. Legit.
I don't know why you didn't.
Because she did. She ate it.
I think they would actually have gotten a loot. I think you should have showed the game and then, like, showed your dog and then sent it to them so that they could see what your dog did.
You know,
and
hey,
then they would have had a laugh.
I really wanted to review this game this week, but my dog ate my homework.
And, like, just, and then they see nothing.
Yeah,
then they
it's
see
not,
cute little Esh Dog
yeah,
the Fourth.
It's just that playable. So
no, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So all those days,
my Biffle plays it. It's really pretty.
Yep, that's what I've heard.
Very nice.
Yeah,
it's very nice.
Yeah,
and Kevin Spacey looks like Kevin Spacey.
And I was so excited because I'm like, I've got another game for my PlayStation 4. Nope, no, I don't.
Kevin Spacey looks pretty awesome.
Kevin Spacey always looks awesome. Not only does Kevin Spacey look awesome, Kevin Spacey also sounds awesome.
Yes.
Like,
actually, yeah.
I love him as an actor. I love House of Cards. I can't wait for the new season.
I haven't watched
You need
House
to watch it.
Someone
you
told me I'd love it. Another friend told me I'd hate it.
It's
and then someone told me to watch Newsroom. And then I started watching Newsroom.
I would say that House of Cards is on the same kind of emotional level.
Empire Boardwalk?
No.
Boardwalk Empire?
Luther.
Which I didn't watch either.
You need... Oh!
Ow! That hurt!
Oh!
Careful!
Sorry. But it pains me that you said that.
That was my tender panda flesh.
We're gonna fix that.
my panda flesh? Or
no,
Luther?
No, we're gonna fix your not watching Luther, or I will destroy your panda flesh.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't be scared. I'm not gonna hurt you.
Okay.
Not gonna hurt you. But with that said, I'm going to let Panda take it away and talk about Dragon Age Inquisition, because I'm actually very curious about Dragon Age. I myself have not played the game. I've watched you play it.
Well, because I have Origins, Awakening.
Yes.
Two. And now I have three.
Yeah. I've watched you play Dragon Age.
And by Dragon Age 3, I mean Inquisition.
And I've listened to you talk passionately about how much you love the game.
I even have a YouTube video from years ago where I talk about demonic boobies.
You do, as a matter of fact. And I also know that there's one particular character that you are quite upset that you still cannot romance in the game.
Yep.
And earlier today, I saw a video of bull creature types
iron bull.
Relations?
Yep, iron. Yep.
So I'm now very interested in this title that I have up until now not been interested in.
So let's get into Dragon Age.
Take it away, Panda.
Okay, so to give a recap for anyone who knows nothing about
Bulls do it.
The franchise. It's a game by BioWare, also the makers of Mass Effect, put up by EA, and
the trifecta of holiness.
Yes, and even though the game is pretty much set in like medieval-ish times and fantasy with like magic and stuff like that, the questing and RPG stuff is pretty basic. But everyone really loved the idea that one, your choices affected the game. Depending on what you said or what you did,
so it's like choose your own adventure.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and you could actively pursue certain people in your party. And in the first few games, they really kind of made it, you know, if you were a dude, you could only romance women, except for the one character who swang both ways, and you couldn't really mix or match. So you really had to, and you had to gun for one person, because if you tried to romance more than one at the same time,
you got flagged as being a player, and then you couldn't romance anybody.
And then no one would go near you.
See,
because you were a whore.
Unlike Mass Effect. Where you
could just bone everybody. Well, or, I mean, Saints Row 4, you could literally bone everybody.
Wait. Except, I think in the last Mass Effect, though, you couldn't.
You couldn't romance Freddie Prinze Jr. in the last Mass Effect game. No matter
But once you had boned somebody, you could no longer romance someone.
Well, no matter what, you couldn't romance Freddie Prinze Jr.
And I still am upset about that.
Because they made him the hottest freaking one. And he wasn't guy with Kanye West chicken leg.
And I'm pretty...
I'm
the one who told you that.
I know, and now every time I see that guy, I'm like,
and you're like, nuh-uh, and then you looked at him, and you're like, oh.
Because it goes to show I never looked from the waist down.
That is Kanye West with chicken legs.
He's all like, cluck, cluck, cluck.
I don't give a cluck.
Jesus walks, cluck, cluck. Anyway. I digress.
Tangent. And you know that was because of Freddie Prinze Jr., right?
Yes, he didn't want people boning him.
Because dumbass. He shouldn't have been in the video game then.
No. Because that's kind of what you do in Mass Effect 2.
Everybody's boned.
That's right.
You're saving the freaking universe. You should get a little...
If you are a hero that saves everybody...
By sacrificing yourself every time, you should get a little.
I'm like, actually, you should fuck everybody. If you're dying at the end... Hold on.
Everybody should fuck you.
You. Like, you should just lay back and be like, go at it.
You should end your day, and someone should just be knocking on the door going, I'm sorry, has someone serviced you yet? No?
I'm here today.
Please allow me to take the honor.
My name is Lola. I'm here for you today.
Okay.
But anyway, going back to...
Sorry.
To it.
Tangent.
In the original game, your character, depending on whatever path, because the path really kind of, whatever race you were, and where in your race you sat, kind of depend started your story. But either way, you are drafted into the Grey Wardens, which are these people who have taken Darkspawn, which is the baddies, the baddies of the world, and
the baddies of the world.
And you've killed a Darkspawn, and you've drank their blood. And not everybody who does this particular ritual survives it. But okay. The ones that do become Grey Wardens, and then they are pretty much there just to service Ferelden, which is primarily the world that you, the realm that you traverse in the first game.
Okay.
And you meet a band of unlikely heroes. Like, you find out that this warrior, who is a Templar, who doesn't really like you at first, you find out is the bastard son of the king. And the king has fallen ill, and they have to have a lands meet to figure out who's going to run the country, and they're trying to get You're trying to convince Alistair if he's going to rule, or if he's not going to rule, and if you happen to romance him, this can either work to your advantage if you're a particular race, or not, which happened in my game. I was an elf, because I happen to like elves, and the relations...
Like the Keebler kind, or just in general?
No, like the tall, you know...
You like the elven people?
Yeah. And I was a pretty awesome elf, I was a mage... And we were, me and Alistair were in love, and then when it came time for the lands meet, and I managed to help him fucking convince that he'd be the best king, thinking that we'd, one, patch up relations between the elves and the humans, because there's kind of a friction there.
Uh-huh, and not the bow chicka bow
bow. Not the good friction. I mean, we had some friction, but, you know, we had lots of friction. Every night at camp, pom pom pom, because that's kind of how I roll. And
you're
at
about
the
end of day nookie, got
and
it.
And at the end of the game, like, right near the big crescendo, which I don't want to spoil, you know, he's kind of like, well, I have to kind of marry this lady and have, like, a baby as soon as possible. I can't, I love you, but I can't marry you, but I'll treat you well. And I'm like, oh, no. You don't get to hit this every night and marry that blonde bitch over there and have babies with her, and I'm just your concubine up, and it's, no. So... I literally, out of pure vengeance, which I'm sure I'm not the only person who did this, when this happened, I was like, oh, this is how it's going to go down? I went and, because this, you know, if you play the game right, your character doesn't necessarily have to die.
Okay.
And I killed my character. I made Alistair suffer for hurting my character by killing her so that he had to live with the rest of his life knowing that the love of his life sacrificed herself for the greater good, and he had to sit there and procreate with that blonde whore. And as you can tell, I'm still bitter. And then I went back and played it again and made it so that he couldn't rule, and he got kicked out of Ferelden, which went over into my second game, which now I'm into.
That's a little Stella Cotter comeback, but okay.
Vindictive.
You know.
I am a very malicious, vindictive person if you cross me, so don't.
Okay.
So in the second game... you didn't necessarily deal in Ferelden. You were in Kirkwall, which is kind of, in my mind, is like a separate island in the area of Ferelden, but isn't beholden to Ferelden law and
now,
stuff like
this
that.
Is the area that I'm familiar with.
Yes,
that's
you watched me play a lot of Dragon Age 2. And in this, your character isn't necessarily a Grey Warden, which is perfectly fine. I think by the end of Dragon Age Awakening and the DLC you got with Morrigan and stuff like that, it kind of finished off your involvement with your character being a Grey Warden, because there's only so many things can happen once you become one. You just fight for good until you die, because the darkspawn blood is killing you.
Uh-huh.
But you're just a regular commoner. You were in a village. You are running with your mom and your brother, depending on if you're a male or a female. So if you're a male, you have a sister, and if you're, you know, a brother, you have a sister, and... whatever class you are, your brother and or sister is the other.
Okay.
And it's you guys and your mom. And your... depending on what happens, or depending what class you are, you know, while you're fighting, your mom gets struck down.
Uh-oh.
Which kind of sucks. And if you are, like, a warrior and your sister's a mage, your sister mage gets taken to the circle, because mages are... they're not as downtrodden as elves are, but people fear mages a lot. And okay. If mages aren't part of circles and they're apostates and they're doing blood magic, people are deathly afraid of them.
Okay.
And so, but a rift happens between you and your sister and your sibling, whatever that is, because during that fight, you had a chance to save your mom and you don't. So there's that issue. That gets resolved in the game, depending on how you play it.
Well, that's good.
But that's the big general basis of Dragon Age 2, is that, you know, this war is going on between Templars and mages, because Templars are in charge of
Templars are fucking all kinds of shit up.
Templars are in charge of the mages that are a part of circles. Those are mages who have registered and are known about. And some mages don't believe that they should be confined like this, because they're people. Like, you know...
mages are people, too.
Exactly. And these mages who don't believe in being registered and being part of circles, you know, are pretty much like vagabonds and are like gypsies and are trying to just live life without tapping into their powers or, you know, using their powers for good and just living under the radar because they just don't want to be involved. And they're being forced to, and those who don't and fight back become apostates. And the magic, depending on the magic you use, you are looked at as evil, which is blood magic, which is where you use your own blood to cast your spells. And it's very hateful magic, so, like, it's revered as really, really bad. But your character, wherever they sit, gets thrown in the middle of this schism between Templars and mages in Kirkwall. And you find out you're part of this royal family, this well-known family in Kirkwall, and your name has been slandered through the mud. And through doing all this stuff, you start rising through the ranks and you start clearing out your name. So you get
your reputation back for your family
name. Absolutely. And then eventually you get a really big house. Like, you find your uncle who's like, yeah, I squandered all the money, and then you manage to get all your money in your big house, and you're like, fuck you, uncle. I'm like, I'm going to live in this house, and hopefully one day I'm going to patch up with my siblings so that we can live in this house together, but you can't have anything to do with this. You're going to live in the slums. And,
you are vengeful.
Well, he deserved it. But okay. Anyway, and I mean, in my game in particular, I was a mage because, one, I transferred my character over a little bit, except I made her a black woman and not an elf anymore, because I know what happens to elves who do the right thing. They get fucked up the ass. So I knew that was, I'm like, nope, I am human, because if I'm falling in love with a prince, I'm fucking ruling shit. Like, it's not Cleopatra, yes, it's happening, except I'm not fucking my brother. Anyway.
Yeah, don't fuck your brother.
Anyway, the romance system in that game was also highly revered, because we got a lot of characters in that, and there was Anders, who was an apostate mage. He was really good at healing. He was a ginger, and I instantly fell in love with Anders, and I knew the minute I met him that something horrible was going to happen, but I knew I was going to do it anyway.
Because he was a ginger.
Because he was a ginger, and he had a British accent, and he was a little short, and that happened to be my thing. And like I said, the main premise of that was the schism between, you know, mages and Templars, and the Templars were part of the religious staple in this world. And Anders kind of became a terrorist and kind of blew up the Chantry, which is like the biggest.
Kinda?
He blew up the Chantry with the highest of the high in the Chantry in it when it blew up. So he, like, killed the bigwigs. Mm-hmm. And all the Templars who were still alive and the military were like, see, mages can't be trusted and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, like, it just went to shit. And then there was Fenris. Fenris is an elf.
Yeah.
He's a hot emo elf with white hair, and he's just angry and bitter, and he is not necessarily a mage, but someone put lyrium in him. It's this ore material that gives him these abilities, and he became like a tool, and he was used, and he finally got away from his captor, and he's like, I'm still trying to understand what I am and what I, like, he kind of had a Wolverine complex.
Uh-huh.
You know, but he had this dark brooding soul, and he didn't trust mages because a mage did this to him. So, you know, if your character happens to be a mage, like, Fenris is totally not about you, but I made him be all about me. And the great thing about Dragon Age 2 in terms of the relationship stuff was that there was friendship and there was rivalry. I always say that word wrong.
Rivalry.
Thank you. With the people who could be in your party. And you could have that word,
rivalry,
with a character and still bang them if you romance them the right way. So you could, like, hate bang Fenris. Like, he'd be like, I don't like you. And then you guys would just bang. And it'd be so hot. It was hot. It was so hot. It's the hottest thing. But anyway, by the end of that whole thing, I don't want to say you resolve the schism between the Templars and the, because you kind of don't.
Right, because Templars.
Because the head of the Templars, Lady Meredith, who's a bitch, and the head of the mages, I don't remember what his name was, but he was an elf guy who had a really cool kick-ass staff. Pretty much, everyone's starting to fight. You end up defeating Meredith. I don't want to say killing, but you defeat her.
Uh-huh.
And then the elf guy kind of resorts to blood magic, and he becomes an evil demon thing that you destroy. And, like, everything's just in chaos. So, this leads us into 3, which has happened well after all the events in Kirkwall.
Okay.
And, mind you, Dragon Age 2 is being told, now this is where the loop comes in, the story that we are living through, we're playing through, is being told by someone who was around to see all of that happen. So it's not the true account of the champion, your character. It's someone from the party, and his name is Varric. And he was a dwarf, redheaded dwarf, muscly chest, has a kick-ass crossbow, and, like, he just is, he embellishes, and, like, he plays with that, too, as a narrator, which is, you know, a great showcase of, you know, unreliable narration, which they play upon in that game, and I hope they're going to do this in 3. And he is recalling all the events that lead up to the giant fight in 2. And when they told us that Varric was coming back for 3, I nearly, like, wet my panties, because Varric was not romanceable in 2, which doesn't make sense, because he's always there with your champion. Like, he always seems to have your back. You learn his tragic backstory, and, like, you want to do him. Like, they make him so doable. It's surprising that he's not an option for doing. So you kind of get angry because you're like, I want to do you. Like, every time you're flirting with him, he's like, oh, I like that, but, you know, we're just friends. And I'm like, no, you're going in this. You are things, if we're a dude, they're going to touch. The scissor thing that I know is not really a thing, that's going to happen. Stop fighting it. And so I thought, oh, in 3, they're totally going to make him romanceable, because people will come flocking from the hills if you make
Varric. Maybe it's just they don't know how to animate dwarf, not dwarf sex.
No. Because your character could be a dwarf, and you could do other dwarves.
But that's what I'm saying. You could do other dwarves, but you can't do other not dwarves. Maybe they don't know how to animate dwarves and not dwarves.
I don't know. But anyway, so in 3, and I'm not too far in 3 yet, you are this character who was at the conclave when the horrible explosion happened. And, like, literally the Seeker, who's this chick named, what's her name? I think it's, like, Catherine or something like that. Cassandra. Her name's Cassandra. And she's got this rich French accent, and that's not the accent, but envision a female accent.
She has what?
A French accent.
It's what? How
like
does
a,
it
like
go?
A, like a sexy French accent. Like, it's kind of like the bitch French accent from any movie that has a bitchy French person in it. And she's the Seeker. And literally, like, when the champion shows up in 2, she's come looking for information about the champion, because she doesn't believe all the accounts that she's heard. And she's like, nah, I think that's bullshit. And you encounter her, and she has been told that someone out of that giant explosion I just told you about, someone came out of it. And they think that person is who's responsible for the explosion. That's your character. And
of
then,
course.
And then you see what happens to you. Well, you see bits of what happened to you in the explosion. And you got sent into this void, which I think is the Fade, but I'm only speculating at this point. Because you're being chased by these demons. And that's where the customization happens, which is a bitch. And I'll get to that in a minute. But you're running from these things, and you see this entity in, like, all white who's reaching out to you, and she's, and that thing is what pulls you out of the rift. And at that point, you have this mark on your hand, and this green light is, like, pulsing from it, and it hurts you. It hurts you every time it pulses. And Cassandra's like, I know you totally blew up the conclave, you've killed everybody in the chantry, everything's going to hell because of you, there are these rifts opening in the sky, and all this darkspawn and demonspawn are coming down, and they're devouring people, and you need to fix this. And your character doesn't remember what happened before anything leading up to and during the explosion, you have no recollection of. So
that's awfully convenient.
Yes, that's how you build a narrative. But anyway, at that point, you can kind of decide to either be cheeky with Cassandra, be upfront and honest and admit that you don't know, or you could be really defensive and not answer her at all. So it really kind of depends on your play style.
What did you choose?
I chose, honestly, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about, because I, as a player, this first time around, don't know. So I'm playing it very genuine. And the rifts that are in the sky that are opening up in Dragon Age 3 are the same color as the mark on your hand. And every time the biggest one gets bigger, it travels up your arm. So people know that it's linked, and they think you can just turn it off. But, you know, like, I was like, I can help. I'll try to help as best as I can. I don't understand how I got this, but it must be related somehow. So I will be, you know, forthcoming, and I will, you know, do what I can. And people, because remember, this is a realm where fantasy is real, so magic and stuff is real, and you have that that friction between fantasy and religion, and like that stableness versus, you know, surreal versus reality, essentially. Uh-huh. Church and state. Think church and state. And
I thought you were going to say church is chicken. I was like, oh, no, church is chicken. No,
church and state. So you're traveling to this rift because you're near the biggest one at the start of the game. And Cassandra's like, if we can close that, then we can, one, get your mark to stop growing, because every time it grows, it's traveling up and it's killing you. This thing is killing you. And the more, if we can close the rifts, we can get more darkspawn to stop, you know, coming into our lands and, you know, killing us. And when you finally get to the rift, you encounter some people. You encounter Varric. You encounter another mage who's an elf also. Well, I mean, my character's an elf. Named Solace and Cassandra. And you're fighting. And the rift starts to open up. And your hand just shoots out. And you connect, like a beam connects between the two of them. And it stops it from growing. And it stops your seal from growing. So, like, oh, they are connected. It's great. And people who have been saved by, because they see that you have this power to close rifts, people are starting to call you the Herald of Andraste, which is the religious figure of the Chantry from the whole universe. And certain people, the Templars, one, don't want people believing that the Herald, which is kind of like, I guess, the world's Jesus.
Okay.
Don't want people thinking that you are Jesus, because it's blasphemous to right. think you're Jesus yeah. when you might not be Jesus and you actually might be a criminal who did this on purpose.
Right.
So, I mean, through what it looks like, there's a grand jury that's going to happen, because you're going to be on trial for, you know, murdering everybody.
Right.
Or a big chunk of people.
That's a thing you kind of got to go through.
People still think that you did it.
Right.
Like, you're O.J. Simpson. People think you did it. You say you didn't do it, but we don't know if we didn't do it.
If you didn't do it.
If we didn't do it, I'm going to write a book about how I would have done it if it had been me.
Right.
But at this point, you don't know. You don't know if you believe that you are the Herald of Andraste. And I think that's going to be a big point of contention in the story, whether or not you just go with the flow, or if you start believing that you are this marker, this pillar of hope.
Dragon Age Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. If you're Dragon Age Jesus. And you're pretty much just trying to, one, get people on your side, to get people to stop hating you and developing influences and shunning these rifts. Because there are rifts everywhere that things are just dropping out, and you have to clear them all out. And the more that you get that, the more power you get, which gives you more options to do other things to help clear your name, so to speak, up until the point where you have your trial. I'm still really early in the game. I'm maybe only 2 hours in. Maybe an hour 45. So let me talk about the things that kind of annoy me.
What?
There are things that annoy me. Which I did talk about one briefly, the customization, which we all know I'm a big fan of customization, especially in characters.
Absolutely.
I love being able to make a character in the image that I would love myself to be represented in.
Yep.
You know, and I love when they give me millions of ways to do that. I like to be expressive.
You like options.
I absolutely love options. And they certainly upped the ante in options. I'm currently playing this on the Xbox One, and I know what you're thinking. Panda, you don't have an Xbox One. I don't. My boyfriend does, but I bought it, so I hope we don't break up, because then I'll have to use ninjas.
Oh, man. You'll have to come over.
Oh, no.
It'll suck so bad.
Anyway, but I'm playing it on the X-Bone right now. And in the customization screen, which, if you're a person who's got both consoles and you've been playing your PS4 a lot, you might find that your characters don't look the way you want because the button scheme is set differently.
What?
And X is not at the bottom.
Did you try to press X to Destiny?
I tried.
While you were playing Dragon Age?
Yeah. And I was like, I didn't want a boy male elf. I wanted a female elf. And I'm like, what is... It took me like 3 tries. So I saw the whole opening cutscene like 3 times and I was like, ugh, can I just do this right? And when I finally did it right, I was fine. So that was just kind of time consuming.
So is that...
That was
irksome. The game's fault, or is that your fault?
I'm sure that's more my fault than the game's fault, but it did irk me. So another thing that really kind of crossed my cookies in, like...
Did it grind your gears?
It grinded my gears a little bit, is the map. Because if you've played the other Dragon Ages, which if you're playing Inquisition, I sure as hell hope you've played the others, because your game save games do transfer into this one, and they will play a significant amount to what happens in your game, which I need to convert mine over, actually. But anyway, in the first game, you pretty much just dealt with Denerim and Ferelden. Denerim, and they're like side cities. They're like next to each other. And you didn't go very far between those. And then in 2, you primarily just went into Kirkwall during the day or at night, or outside of Kirkwall in the Wildlands. So you didn't travel very far. The mapping system about how far you have to go, you're traveling between Ferelden and Auralis. I'm probably saying it wrong, but sorry. It's pretty much like...
It's not Cialis, and that's all that matters.
Orlais. I think it's like Orlais. And Orlais is like Dragon Age France. It's like France.
Okay.
They all have like French accents
over there. And baguettes?
I'm sure there are baguettes there.
Okay.
But you... So you're pretty much traveling between two countries super fast, which doesn't make any sense. And when you open up the giant world map, the map...
Maybe it's your demon blood thing.
But you don't have that in this. You're not a Grey Warden in
Grey. Well, then I don't know why.
But the map is so huge. And I mean huge in the sense of, like, Far Cry 3 huge.
Three like, huge or 4 huge?
Well, I haven't played 4.
Oh, because 4 is fucking huge.
3... I feel like BioWare, EA, were, like, out having, like, coffee at, like, a coffee bar.
And they were, like...
And Ubisoft happened to, like, come out of a cab in front of this cafe. Like, they were just gonna go in for a donut. But BioWare and EA were like, no, sit down, talk to us. We want to, like, powwow with you. And they were like, well, we were just gonna talk about mapping at this meeting I was gonna go to. And I feel like BioWare took a big leap of faith by trying to utilize Ubisoft's mapping system from their HUD.
I'm just basically trying to say that they built a really big map.
It's with really, like, tiny, tiny little symbols where shit's supposed to be. And it's, like, it seems really small right now, but when you zoom out, it's, like, blurry with all the places I haven't explored yet. And it's really big.
So it's really, like, the Assassin's Creed map.
It's really big. And I'm like, don't get me wrong, I feel like the universe needs to be big, but this map is really overpowering and it overwhelms me as a player. Because I have that strong collective, like, I like to collect things in my game. So, I mean, I went after all those feathers and I went after all those, like, you know.
You're not gonna do that in Unity!
After I saw that screen, no. And sadly, I feel like I won't do it in Dragon Age because it's a lot. And there's so many things that are...
Do you feel like it's $60 worth of a lot, though?
Honestly, I actually feel like I got more out of it in my Dragon Age game than general. But it's still overwhelming because all my character choices have significant weight on how my story goes. My save games also weigh heavily on what happens in the universe. I have to collect all this other shit that also shifts the balance of my... So there's all these things that are tipping my scales. And the scales are only supposed to go two ways. I feel like these scales go, like, two ways, but then, like, tilted. Like, each tray kind of tilts. So, like, I feel like there's all these things that are going to be playing against me that I'm not fully aware are going to weigh on my game. And, I mean, I played this type of game. I played all the classes, all the races, because the stories are different based on that. So I feel like I'm going to be playing a lot of Dragon Age. And while that's not necessarily a bad thing, I feel like I'm walking into a grind that I'm just going to do because that's the way I roll, but I don't know how much I'm going to enjoy doing it. And the romances, which I have not even... I don't think I've encountered anything yet where I can open up chats for romance, but your characters, the classes, the races that you can be are human. You can be an elf. You can be a
mage?
No, that's a class.
Oh.
I think you can be a dwarf, and you can also be a canary.
What's a canary?
So,
is that like a chocobo? No.
So in the first game, you encountered some Canaris, and they are a tribe of humanoid. Think the devil from Legend, the demon from Legend. Yeah. So those giant big horns, not red though, make them like ashy. Like, put the demon from Legend in the color scheme of Kratos.
Okay.
And that's what the Canari look like. They're a very proud, nomadic race. They really believe in the strongest wins. They have a lot of battles to, you know, develop that type of stuff. And they have a religion that's completely different from Andraste and all that stuff. So they're kind of like, fuck all y'all. We're going to do our thing. Right. Don't cross us because we'll kill you. Life. Exactly. They're the thugs. They're the thugs of Dragon Age. And in the first game, you meet one, Sven, and you save his life. So even though he doesn't like what you stand for because you save his life, he joins your party. And you can befriend him, and he warms up a little bit, but not too much.
Because he's fucking Canari.
Because he's a Canari. And in the second game, there's a big plot point with the Canaris who are at Kirkwall, which leads to a mid-story climax, like a mid-boss type of deal.
Okay.
And that's pretty cool, too, but that you only encounter them that one time, and you don't have one in your party. You just encounter them. In this game, you can play one, and you will encounter one who will be part of your party who you can bang. Or rather, he can bang you.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, was that the bull thing? Was that the bull video thing?
Yeah, Iron Bull. Yeah. Yeah. So apparently people got really far in the game and were showing some prospects for bumpin' uglies. And Iron Bull
ugly
happens...
Ugly bumpin'.
And an Iron Bull, who is a Canari, apparently does some pretty rough stuff. I have yet to watch the video because I want to be virginally pure when it happens because I might not...
Bone?
I might not bone him. Yes, you could. But I don't... not in my first game, but I do plan to see all of them, so I know I'm going to encounter Iron Bull in a romantic capacity, and I hope I'm mentally prepared for when that happens. Visually, I feel the game is really strong. They have two focal points of combat in this game. One that if you really liked how the game played in Dragon Age Origins and Awakening, you can resort yourself back to that. Or if you want the option that happened in Dragon Age 2, you have that option too. Which I think is really great because people who like RTS stuff really liked the first way that they played role-playing, how they had the role-playing combat in 1. And I actually thought the game flowed better with the style that they incorporated in, too. So that's how I'm playing mine right now.
Okay.
It came out on the 18th, so it's out in stores now. If you have a friend who's part of loves the Dragon Age franchise and doesn't own this game, if you want to give it to them before Christmas, they'll certainly be playing it well after Christmas. It's got enough content with more on the way. I'd love to see, I don't know for sure how many of the characters from the first three games we're going to encounter, because I'm including Awakening, which was more of like an addition to Origins, but not really, because you could play it standalone.
It was its own disc.
Like, you could play it standalone, but you're missing out on key points of the story if you only played that. But I wonder if we're going to see everybody. I'd love to see everybody somehow incorporated into Inquisition. I don't feel like we will, however, but I think we're going to see some choice ones. Like, I mean, we've seen Varric. We have seen Liliana. Like, I feel like she's going to have a stronger point in this game, which I think is needed because she was kind of an underrated character in 2. And I wish I could say I'd love to see Anders, but depending on how you played your game, Anders would be dead. And Isabella, I would love to see Isabella, and I'd love to be able to do Isabella, but I know she has, like, sea herpes, so...
Wait, what?
So, in Dragon Age 2, this is the last thing I'll say about it, Isabella is, a rogue, and she's a duelist type, and the first time you encounter her in 1, she looked totally different, so they gave her a whole makeover for 2, and she kind of looks like a sea pirate. And you know she's going to betray you, but she's that fire that you're like, I know it's hot, I shouldn't touch it. And you touch it, and you get burned. And
literally? With sea herpes?
Well, at one point in the game, if you romance Isabella, before you decide you're going to put things into her or vice versa. You see her walking to Anders, who's your group healer. And she's like, yeah, can you cure that thing on my lady parts? Because she's kind of uncouth that way and she just speaks her mind. And he's like, you really need to stop messing with the blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, these spells are only going to do so much. These spells are only going to cure so much. And she's like, just give me the potion. So she kind of has, like, sea herpes. Or, like, she's...
That doesn't sound like kind of.
She has, like crabs. She probably has crabs. Or gonorrhea. Or something to that nature. But, I mean, I'd like to see her show up somewhere and say something cheeky. She was a great character for that. I can't wait to see how the characters that we are being introduced to play well in the scenario. I'm looking forward to a lot of things. It seems a little, the pacing from the start seems a little slow, and with such a big world, I would think that they would speed things up so that would give you more time to generally explore through tutorial and get used to what system of fighting you're going to use, how to really kind of search for things, what you're allowed to do versus what you're not allowed to do. But they're really kind of laissez-faire in it, and I think that's just because of the French in the game, I don't know. Yeah, lazy. No, I'm just kidding. But I will fill you guys in more as I've played more. But so far, outside of the few things that are a little quirky and wonky to me, it's definitely a game that I'm going to complete. And I won't fully pass judgment until I've completed the game.
And that's fair, because, you know, final judgment really should happen after you've completed the
entire story. I don't think final judgment should happen at the beginning. That seems a little wrong.
Preemptive?
Yeah, exactly. Peep too soon.
Presumptuous?
But that's what I've been playing lately, and I'm enjoying the experience as much as I have played it thus far. So if that opinion changes, you'll hear it on this show. So what about you, sister? Because I have eaten up so much fucking time of our show talking about Dragon Age and who I'm gonna bone and who I'm kind of scared to bone. And I've never been scared to bone in a game.
I was about to say, can you put the qualifier on that? Because
I'm always down to bone in games.
Yeah, there you go.
but that's what I've been doing. So what have you been playing? Oh, wait. We know what you've been playing. Unity.
So here's what I'm going to do. Because I obviously have not finished the game. Okay? Has not happened. Have not finished it, not even remotely close to finishing the game. So I'm going to tell you, like Panda, how far I've gotten and what I've been up to. First, it took forever to actually jump into the game because, like many games of today, there was a big old patch and download that I had to do first. Once that was done, and that probably took even on my great internet connection.
And I have a great internet connection.
It took roughly about
30 minutes.
No, it took roughly
17 minutes.
Yeah, around 17, 18 minutes to get the
good at it.
To get
first
the patch
try.
Downloaded, to get it expanded, to then get connected to a Ubisoft server. Because the game is constantly talking to the servers to allow the multiplayer...
It's always on!
...co-op piece in. So that was really a little bit of a pain. But after 20 minutes, I was finally into the game. Launched the game, no problem. First thought, wow, this is breathtaking. And it was, and is. I can tell you right now, that's one thing that no matter what you want to say about Unity, it is a gorgeous game. Now, I am playing the game on the Xbox One. I have not experienced any frame rate issues playing the game to date.
Okay.
I have experienced a couple of wonky bugs, like my first moments walking around the town. There are a bunch of people that just kind of started populating in the area.
Okay.
Which you're used to, you know, as you go through games, you've had where you walk on, all of a sudden it starts filling in people in the background that you're going to walk
through.
Yep,
GTA 5 does that.
Yeah, yeah.
During the online.
So, completely used to that, not a problem. However, these people weren't appearing off in the distance on the street. They were actually appearing from below the ground.
Zombies!
Okay, and so the tops of their heads were just, like, bouncing on the in the street.
On the street?
No, in the street. They were in the street.
So wait, was
they
it were, like a cabbage patch of heads?
Yeah, it really was. For like, and it, they would just randomly that like start terrifying. Popping up.
I don't think
but
I'd
they
want
would
to
be
that.
Walking and doing their routine. So it was just really ethereal and weird. And I was like, huh, pretty sure that's not supposed to happen. But okay. And then there were other people that would randomly populate, like, on top of lampposts and then step down them like they were walking down steps. You're like, you're on a lamppost.
Walking down a lamppost.
You can't walk down
a lamppost. Walking down a lamppost.
Like stairs. You
These
can't
are
do
not
that.
Stairs, bro.
They're not. You can't do that. Stop.
Does not compute.
Yeah, did not.
Construct
does
additional
not.
Pylons.
You must construct additional pylons. So, that was a piece of it. And was weird. And that hasn't happened to me in the last couple of days playing the game. So, I think that may have been just some residual stuff from just getting the patch installed, that kind of thing. Not exactly 100% sure. But I can't recreate it, so we're going to chalk it up to just random wonkiness.
Okay.
All right. So, the story goes that you are Arno. And unbeknownst to you until a point, very early in the game, do you find out that your father was an assassin. The way you find this out is he's killed.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Sacre bleu!
Sacre bleu, indeed.
My papa es muerta.
No, that's Spanish.
I don't know what... Mary. No, that's not dead.
No.
Merde shit.
No, that's shit.
In French.
And, you know, if I had to bear witness to my dead father...
Was it stabby, or was he already dead when you found him?
No, he was dead when you got there. But you were with him when he was alive. He had to go into a meeting and told you not to stray. And of course, you
stray.
Did, because you were chasing after a girl.
It's always about the pee.
It's always a girl, man.
It's always about the pee, man.
Always a girl. And you're, you know, trying to not get caught for stealing fruit that she convinced you to steal. Oddly enough, it's an apple.
Ha!
From a table that you're not
nice
supposed
homage.
To.
Nice homage.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cute. And it's your first introduction to stealthing and as a child. And then you come back and find out that your dad's been stabbed. There's a whole bunch of people all around him. You walk up and you drop the watch that he'd given you so it's stuck on the time.
Your time bracelet.
Yeah. Well, basically. It's a pocket watch, but you drop it so it breaks on the time that he died. And then you carry that for the rest of your
life.
As
a reminder.
Yep. Yep.
Nice.
You get taken in by the father of the girl that you were chasing and become basically an errand boy of their house.
Okay.
Turns out this guy is a Templar.
All right.
You don't figure that out till down the road. You're given a task to get a letter to him, and instead you're more focused on getting to his daughter.
Trying to get that bait.
Again. And she's
that personal time.
Elise is a good-looking redhead, for sure. So you slip the note underneath his door thinking, he'll get it, whatever, I'm gonna go and, like, try to tap that. And it turns out that you really should have gotten that letter to him because it was letting him know that somebody was going to attempt to kill him. He didn't get the note. He gets killed. Elise finds out that you were supposed to give him the note. She's not really happy with you.
You ain't getting any now.
You get basically set up by the people who did kill him and get thrown into jail where you meet Bellic.
Okay.
And
Nico Bellic.
No, not Nico Bellic.
Oh, okay.
And Bellic is an asshole, but he teaches you how to fight. Sword fight and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's like doing the Iron Mask.
Yes. And he teaches you this because when you first walk into the prison, you can see all these weird symbols and shit on the wall. And it's assassin stuff that you usually can only see with eagle vision.
Right.
So he realizes that,
you have the potential of being an assassin.
So that's why he takes him on the wing, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, because he's an assassin.
Eventually, the revolution starts carrying on.
Viva the revolution.
No, not that one.
No, not that one.
So,
you just want to save the world.
Stop it.
Okay, I'm done.
Stop. All right, so revolution's going on, there's some cannon fire, an opportunity to break out of the prison pops up.
Can you hear the people sing?
Yeah, that revolution.
Okay, Les Miserables. Miserables.
All right, so moving right along. So you break out of the prison, and then you have to find your way to the Assassin's Guild Hall, where you take a swig of something in a chalice, and you have a
real... Get crunk!
Real memory thing where basically you see these Renaissance-style paintings of different stages in your life, starting from when you were born to when your dad died to ultimately your death as an old man that you then have to jump into. You finish jumping through that point and voila! You are an assassin.
So every assassin gets to see their whole entire life?
Evidently, they do.
So that would just make me wonder if all the assassins that we have experienced pretty much through Desmond, if they all saw when they were going to die.
And they still accepted their path.
They had to.
That's what makes them a hero. Alright, so that's the setup for how you become an assassin. Now let's talk about the gameplay mechanics.
How are they?
So there are quite a few new mechanics to the game, which we've talked about before. There are different types of bombs that you can use, and now it's really important that you do use the different bomb types.
Okay.
Because AI is smarter, they dodge more, and they parry more and effectively than before.
And they're thrusting better?
I'm not saying that.
They're thrusting better.
And they're Roman packs more often.
Of course they do. That's an animalistic mentality.
And so it's really important that for many missions, you don't try to be Leroy Jenkins. Like, that's something that you could do in previous Assassin's games. You really didn't have to stealth. If you built up your skills enough, you could just walk into a room and fucking take out everybody. That's not the case in Unity. There are times when you really, really, really need to distract a group of guards and get them to go over to another side of the building with a cherry bomb so you can walk down the stairs and actually go underneath a building to get in.
I feel like you're talking from experience.
I am talking from experience. One thing I do like in the game, as far as new mechanics go, is that for every mission, there's no one way through the mission.
Oh, there's multiple ways of solving.
There is. And that's one thing that I think that, like, for me, if you're this badass assassin, I don't understand why you always have to approach this mission from this one way. So if there's one particular task that you're not really good at performing, like one QTE, that you're stuck, and that's the only one that you can do. So until you can do it, you can't progress through the game. Every situation so far that I've been in, when I sit down and assess what my target is and how I get there, there's usually at least three different ways that I can do it. And it's played as a video of Arnaud assessing the situation. So it's really him looking down and going, okay, here's an entrance point here. Here's a thing that if I interrupt this, it'll create a distraction that'll pull people over here. Or here's just a balls blazing, like, straight.
I'm just going in with my guns and my
that I may or may not
out.
Exactly. That I may or may not survive. So I find that I tend to go a little combo of both where I'll do some of the distraction.
So you stuff. Lessen the load and then yeah. You go in guns blazing?
No, I don't go guns blazing. I learned my lesson. I try to take the sneaky underground path whenever possible, or the above ground path, as opposed to the land path. So that I have a minimal amount of people that I have to...
encounter.
Yes. And, or effectively kill. Because stealthing past them, even though they added the cover option, and the ability to, fire your ranged weapons from cover, still doesn't work really well for me. And, I tend to end up, dead. Skewered like a shish kid.
Lay dead.
Skewered,
Felite.
Mort.
Mort. Ah, yes, that is French for death. More.
So, that. What I will say that I don't enjoy about Unity, because it is huge. It is massive. I mean, Ubisoft is not playing when they say that the world is massive. I've walked into almost every house that I've seen an open door, open window on, and there's all kinds of stuff going on in the house every time I walk into it.
People be courting
yep.
on couches.
And stuff. People are moving. They're cooking. I ran into Madame Tussaud and did an errand for her where I had to go track down some severed heads that somebody had stolen
from
her. Why you steal heads from
the Madame and the Marquis de Sade.
Yeah, I ran into the Marquis de Sade. I had to do a mission for him to keep his ass from going to jail.
Why are you helping that pervert, yo?
Because he helps me...
with severed heads.
Nope. He helped me get information on...
Kate Winslet.
No! The king of the thieves and help me kill him. And also, the King of Thieves looked like old Greg from...
I'm old Greg!
Yeah.
I'm old from the Mighty Boosh.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm old Greg!
But looked like old Greg. So, like, gray hair, old Greg.
Ugh.
Like, legit, but looked like old Greg.
Ugh. I'm old Greg with my mangina.
So that...
Play your love games with me.
So, what I'm not enjoying about Unity is... systems that I loved in previous Assassin games, I feel like they completely screwed the pooch on. Case in point, chests. So there are a shit ton of chests all around Paris.
Well,
which is awesome. The problem is, you can't open all of them. So if you spend your money buying the time savers to see the map for where all the chests are, you're going to be very pissed when you start seeing that some are colored red, some are colored blue, some are colored yellow, and some are white. The ones that are white are the ones that you can open at any point in time without any additional skills or anything like that.
General.
The ones that are red are ones that you have to lockpick. So first you have to acquire the lockpick skill. Then, if you want to make it easier so that you don't waste a whole lot of lockpicks, because you do have to buy lockpicks, you just don't have an...
You don't just have a trusty lockpick that has gotten you through since World War I.
Correct. They break every time you fuck up.
Well, yes, that's how lockpicks should work.
Okay. And so, that takes assassin points that you have to earn through missions to acquire and then to beef up. And I think there are 3 levels of the lockpick skill tree. Then there are blue chests that you can only get if you play and do the Nomad missions in the Companion application, which you can run on your iOS device or Android device. And then there are the yellow chests, which you can only get by doing the Initiate stuff.
Is that also
part of the Companion? Yeah. Which are different missions, and you have to achieve different levels in the Initiate stuff to then locate the correct Initiate's chest to open it.
Oh, that sounds like a bitch.
It's horrible. I avoid all chests for the most part, and when I walk up to one, as soon as I see the lock on it, I just keep walking.
Keep on walking.
Because the locksmith animation is horrible. You actually have to hit the button a beat off from when you think you have to hit the button in order to actually hit it to unlock it.
Ah, see?
So, it's one of those things where, like, you have to get the timing down in your head for when you think you'd want to hit the button, and then you either have to wait a half second before or a half second after that to actually hit the button.
Ugh.
Pain in the ass. And I tried recalibrating my game to see if it was just my TV calibration
it's
that was
not,
off.
It's not, you.
It's not. So, that sucks, and that's why I stopped lockpicking chests. What really drives me nuts about that are the missions that require that you lockpick a door, because it's the same mechanic to do it, in order to complete the mission, or to get to the person that you need to off to complete the mission. So that's a pain in the ass, but you have to do it. Additionally, the thing that I talked about before, where I was like, hey, you don't have to buy the points packs if you don't want to buy the points packs to, like, beat
up. Uh-huh. I remember you had this conversation.
It. Yeah. So then I actually looked. So this is me saying I'm going to eat a little bit of crow here.
Oh, my God. Here's a crow sandwich.
Dude.
Put it in your pie hole.
Hold on. Let me finish talking, and then I'll take a bite.
Okay.
So that was before I looked at the prices of what various weapons and equipment cost in the game, and went, nope, there's no way that I'm going to earn it. So you have different levels of gear, and your gear does in fact play a part in your abilities in Unity, which it always, I think, should have. You know, before you'd get some armor and you'd get buffs for your defense, and so you could take more hits, but it didn't really change your ability to play. It just upped your ability to take damage.
Okay.
It's different in this game. So you have different types. You have a musketeer type armor. You have a brigand type armor. You have a military type armor. You have Arnaud's specialty armor. Then you have Phantom armor, and then you have another one that's all French words that I'm not going to say because I'm going to butcher the language, and I don't want to do that.
You shouldn't say pa-anana. I am not the pineapple.
For each of those armor types, you have a beginner level, then you have a improved level, then you have a master level, and then you have a legendary level.
Okay.
Of each of those types for all the pieces of armor. So you have armor for your hands, you have a belt cinch that you can equip, you have a chest, obviously, legs, feet, and each of these different types affect how many different consumables you can hold. They also affect things like how much noise you make when you drop from a building, or how long you can linger in an area before an enemy necessarily picks up on you. So depending upon your style of play, you actually really want to pay close attention to the gear and equipment that you pick to make sure that you're buffing, you're picking things that buff the right things for you for how you're going to play. Now, legendary gear tends to range in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to purchase. I can tell you right now, I'm at this point 17 hours into the game.
Okay.
I currently, after upgrading my base three times, just crested $10,000.
Ooh.
So
it's gonna be a while.
Purchasing any of these types of items, and again, that's just for one piece, not the whole outfit.
Right.
You're looking at like cool half millions to millions of dollars in the French Revolution time that you would have to get in order to get these weapons. However, if you have hack points, which I don't know how you earn hack points. I'm just going to say that right now, right? Because I'm playing the game. Right now, the only thing I know is that you can buy hack points, which is what I did. You can hack the weapon and get it at any point in time. And the hack point values are fractions of the dollars. So as an example, the legendary military coat, which is unlocked for purchase at any point in time, would cost 160,000 francs, dollars, okay, or whatever.
Francs.
You can hack it for 1,000 hack points. Meaning if you hack it, you immediately get it right then and there.
Okay.
So I bought hack points so that I could get...
Is this where I should hand you your crow sandwich?
Yep. I bought hack points so I could get a better sword, a better gun, and at least master level chest, legs, and gauntlets.
Okay.
Because when you start the game, your character is so squishy, and there are constantly people that if you walk too close by them, they'll just pick a fight with you. Nobody else on the street, they'll just pick a fight with you, because fuck you in your face. And they talk shit about you if you're walking past them and you get picked up on their radar. Like, they'll say things like, oh, that's right, keep walking, you little pissy pants, and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. They've said things about my mother, whatever. So, in order to really progress through this game very well, there will come a point that you will have to buy points. Because on a collection piece, you're not going, the average gamer is not going to spend hours on the initiate stuff, the companion application, and the gameplay. Because I haven't even gone to Versailles yet. There's a travel dot for me to go to Versailles.
Okay.
On the map. I'm in Paris. The map that I showed you earlier is just Paris. I haven't even got to the part of the game where I go to Versailles.
You're in for a treat.
So, Assassin's Creed Unity. It's big. It's definitely,
it's big.
It's definitely got bugs. At the end of the day, however, I am a fan of the Assassin's game. And as far as stealthing goes, the missions themselves are actually quite interesting. The bits of known history that they weave in with kind of different takes. You know, at this point in the revolution, I don't think the Marquis de Sade actually was alive. I believe that at this point he was already, like...
dead?
He was... Yeah, I think he was dead by now, or was jailed on his way to dying, as opposed to running a successful whorehouse in
That's
one of my districts.
That's not all that Marquis de Sade did.
But I have to say, as far as the game goes, outside of the bugs and the having to buy the points packs and the skill packs to upgrade myself, to get my stuff in a comfortable area on the game, I'm actually enjoying playing the game. I haven't been able to do multiplayer yet.
And, I know, and we will do it, because I promise.
And at this point right now, we're going to have to hold off on it a little bit, because there have been some crashes of the game, and at the time that we're recording this podcast, Ubisoft has recommended that people clear out their contacts list in the game, and not try to pair up with people using that feature to do multiplayer, because it might quit your game on you.
Oh no!
So, hopefully that'll get fixed and we can jump back into it. But I gotta say that, like, as far as traversing a really gorgeous map and having to focus on strategy for accomplishing a mission as opposed to just get up really high and jump assassinate everything, the game really makes me focus on stealth. And I still jump into hay bales.
It's a hard habit to break.
You have to do it. I did jump off of Notre Dame, which is pretty fucking sweet. It's really high. It was really high.
Oh, no shit.
No, it's really high, though. So if you have any issues with vertigo,
I do.
But at the end of the day,
got a problem with vertigo!
At the end of the day, guys, I'm going to finish this one, because I'm enjoying, actually, the story that's in there. And I do think that they're doing a very good job of setting up Arnaud and Elise in a way that makes you kind of root for Arnaud getting through to Elise.
So I wonder if this is still in Connor's timeline then.
No, we're not in Connor's timeline because we're in the French Revolution.
So is this like a whole new person then, maybe?
So I don't believe that this is Connor's bloodline, which okay. I think is what you meant.
Yeah.
I don't think this is Connor's bloodline. I think this may be somebody else. Because as you play through the game, you get contacted by Bishop.
Okay.
Who's working with the team. And is letting you know that the Templars are fooling you. It's not entertainment. And basically leads you to the truth. And says that you have the skills that they need. And they really could use your help. Because the Templars are looking for another sage. And everyone believes that the key to finding the sage is in your timeline.
Okay.
So I don't think that this is the same person that we were working with to go through Connor's timeline in the previous game. But it's an assassin's game, you know, at the end of the day, and the story's pretty good. The action, when you're actually in a mission, which you saw, runs seamlessly.
Yeah, it does. There was sometimes I'm like, is this an FMV? And you're like, nope.
Like, ready? FMV live. It is seamless moving from FMV to live gameplay. The characters respond quickly. The AI is smarter, so it's not just stab, and I'm done. They dodge better, they evade, they parry more, they have stronger weapons, they attack more impacts, they don't wait to attack you.
Right, they just come at you. Come at me, bro. Oh, shit, you're already here.
So you do need to parry more often, which means you need a weapon that is
good,
capable of parrying, because you get the stats for each of your weapons, and your one-handed things do have an impact on your stealth, damage, and parry.
Oh.
So you want to keep an eye on that. I think that once they get through the bugs, it's going to be a really good game. Right now, it's just
not there yet.
It's decent. It's a decent Assassin's game. I think that once they hammer out the bugs with multiplayer, they hammer out some of the frame rate things, and for the love of Jesus, get rid of the fucking locked chests. I get wanting to get people to play initiates and the nomad stuff. That's fine. Drop the lockpick chests. Just make them regular fucking chests. And it'd be a great Assassin's game in my book.
All right.
But I will finish it, so you will hear about it when
I finish it. We will.
So there you have it. That's the podcast for this week. To check out the things that we're writing about, like the stuff for our holiday gift guide, make sure that you check out our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. Check out the podcast, always and forever, at www.electricsisterhood.com. You can also find the podcast in iTunes, either on your desktop using the iTunes application or on your iOS device using the podcast application, searching for Eshcast, Electric Sisterhood, and subscribing. You can also find our podcast in Stitcher Radio. You can also find it on the VOG Network, vognetwork.com. Airs Tuesday nights right before Anime Jam Session. But we're not the only thing that make up the Land of Esh. Make sure that if you're listening to us, that you also check out KBD's show, No Borders, No Race. New episodes go out on Tuesdays. For beats that will move your feet, check out Geek Aggro, hosted by our homeboy Deuces Wild. Those new episodes go out on Wednesdays. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues...
He's got issues.
Y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program. Call in live. Be part of the YouTube stream. It's phenomenally random. We love it. You've got to be a part of that. And for the rest of your week, keeping your nerd needs satiated, we're on social. You should be too. So check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh. You can also follow us on Twitter at ESH News. We share all kinds of news about everything that we love. It's nerdy. You're going to love it. Make sure you check it out. So with that, I'm going to turn to my sister and say, Ayo, sis.
Yes.
What shit you digging this week?
Elves.
Yeah, you are kind of on that elven tip.
Mm-hmm. I want to be.
Oh, I walk right
into that. Yep. What shit are you digging this week?
I gotta go.
Elves? Is it elves?
No, it's not elves.
Is
it's
it BuzzFeed Hot Guys? Yes.
Yeah.
High five, bro.
Just love BuzzFeed. Love BuzzFeed. So as always, I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
See you later.